Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Inspired Evolution, a show dedicated to helping you actually live the life that you love. I'm your host, Amrit Sandhu, international speaker, global coach, and loving podcaster. As a gift for tuning into this podcast, I have something really special just for you. My premium short course, which can teach you how to meditate in just 7 days, you can download it now at www.inspiredevolution.com/learn. That's www.inspiredevolution.com/learn. Learn how to meditate in just 7 days. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this powerfully insightful conversation. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss any of the latest episodes launching every Monday, designed to help you live the life you love and keep you inspired to evolve. I think I saw an angel just walk by. Welcome to the Inspired Evolution. It is a, what is it? You know it. It's a treat to be here today. We have with us Tracy Kopp. Tracy, how are you, Sister Bear?
I'm well, thank you, Amrit. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm really good. For those tuning in to Tracy for the first time, she is the founder of The Urban Alchemist here in Melbourne. And we go way back. It feels way back, doesn't it, Tracy?
Yeah, I think it's been some years now, Amrit.
It's been quite a while. Yeah. And just for those tuning in, just so you know, Tracy is actually one of my wife's favorite people alive. So it's a real treasure and a real pleasure to have you here, Tracy. Welcome. So I wanted to tune in. There was a point where you reached out and said, hey, Amrit, let's do a podcast episode. I'm raring to go and I want to have this conversation. I'm at a point in my journey where sharing what's present for me would be really helpful for my process. And I was like, dude, this sounds really epic. For those that are tuning in, Tracy, I'm just going to start calling you Trixie because that's what I know you as. It's just going to be way easier. Affectionately known as Trixie. But for those that walk into The Urban Alchemist and you start having these chats, you start to realize that Trix doesn't really do surface, right? Like, it's always heaps of fun, but she dives all the way in super deep. And some of the conversations that I've had with you have had some of the most, like, impactful, like, long-lasting impacts on my life as well, coming in. And literally she's there cracking my back, but we're talking about things that actually, you know, internally leave, I was going to say, a bit of a fissure sometimes. but yeah, they leave a lasting impact. And when you reached out and said, actually, you know, there's something that I want to share, I was all ears. And I'm really excited to be here and part of this conversation because, yeah, I know how much just being able to share can also move and shift energy. And I know how much you're aware of that as well. and just that you felt called, and I feel honored to have you here and on this episode to share yourself today. So what was the impetus for bringing you that brought you to that point in reaching out to say, hey, I want to share something?
I've been doing a lot of work over the last few years on me and on looking at parts of my life that have been very challenging for me and really facing up to some of the harder things and the things that have been really stuck in my body and in my heart, I guess, things that have been very difficult to look at. And I feel like I'm kind of out the other side of that fairly well by now. But, you know, in my practice in the Urban Alchemist and with the clients that we have, I notice that there's a similarity in a lot of people where we're afraid to look at certain aspects of our lives that feel too hard to look at. And, you know, I kind of wanted to share some of what I've learned, because I feel like the sharing and the exploring this stuff out loud with other people can be of benefit for me as well as for the other people.
I love the grace that you have in that as well, just knowing that, you know, as we make ourselves vulnerable, we give other people permission to shift and heal the things that are stuck for them. Yeah. And that's one of the things that I think is potentially one of the most endearing things about you, is that you're not afraid to say what's on your heart and what's on your mind. And yeah, we all find it super endearing. It's it's fun. It's really fun. So, you know, we were talking, and this today is, I feel like what we're talking about is not as, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of humor in this episode, but yeah, I think when we touched base, it was like, Amrit, you know, I've been on a massive journey with motherhood. And it's fascinating to me to just be present to, you know, you as a mother, because you're just so full of life that I forget that you're a mother at times as well. And I just,
those things aren't mutually exclusive, Amrit.
That's Trixie just reminding me. Totally agreed. Thank you for that wonderful reminder. But yeah, there is that perception, right, that people have. It's like when you're a mother, it's like now you're like got a weird kind of kilter with responsibility. You're not allowed to have joy and this sort of stuff. And maybe that's just me stereotyping it. So pardon me for that, and thank you for calling it out. How has your journey as a mother been? Where did you want to start us off at? You know,
It's been a roller coaster being a mum for me. I guess maybe we start at the beginning. I guess I'll tell you about when I had my daughter. I was 21, and my mum had me when she was 21, and I had my daughter when I was 21, and it was a wonderful accidental pregnancy, and I was with her dad for a short time beforehand, and we decided that we would just go for it. And it was so beautiful, you know, and it was so lovely to be young and full of life and energy. And, you know, I guess I was a really fun mum when she was little. I had lots of energy for her, lots of space for her. She was such a beautiful little being. And, you know, it was such a joy to be in that role, I guess, at that point. Yeah.
Beautiful. And from there then, you've subsequently been on a massive journey where you've learned a lot from each other. What were some of the biggest things that your daughters taught you about you?
Ooh, it's a good question. She's taught me what a massive jerk I am. That's probably the...
Dude. Yeah. You know this goes out live, Trixie.
It's okay. Yeah. That's probably the biggest thing. I mean, I've learned so much from her. I've really, you know, she, of all the people in my life, she has made me really look deeply at myself and at some of the ways that I trick myself and the ways that my shadow really plays out, you know, ways that I tell a story in a certain way when actually the reality is quite different than that. Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is she holds a mirror of integrity up for you. Do you think that's the nature of your particular kid, or do you think that's children in general?
I suspect it's children in general. I really can't speak for anybody else and their relationship with their child, but my child is definitely, she hasn't fallen far from the tree, and I'm pretty good at looking at other people and really seeing maybe what's there. Mm. And whether I speak it or not is one thing, you know, in those other relationships. But the closeness of the relationship that we have, because for most of the years we've been, it's just been the two of us. She's really good at calling me out and pointing out where I am not in integrity.
Mm. How, this is a silly question almost, but I have to ask it. How was it raising your daughter on your own?
Some ways good, some ways bad. So her dad has always been around. Her dad and I separated when she was 8.
Yep.
And the path that we took then, both of us, because we were young and quite stupid really, and we didn't know how to hold ourselves. We didn't have a whole lot of self-awareness. And so the two of us really didn't co-parent well at all by any stretch of the imagination. And so Ivy really languished in this no man's land of difficult relationship between the two of us, and she was just kind of stuck there, hoping that someone was going to be present for her and useful to her and on her team. And you know, we both really let her down for a long time. So you know, for me, she was pretty much with me for most of the years since that. And, you know, there's been loads of things in my life that I haven't handled well for all the same reasons, just not having self-awareness, not being present to myself and therefore not being able to be present to her. And the way that that's played out has been that there's been for many years a massive rift in our relationship and the way that we're related to one another.
When did you first become aware that that was happening? Like, you know, because at some point, let me just give you that a bit of context. Sometimes, you know, like I think about the frog metaphor, like, you know, if the temperature's rising and the frog's in the pot and it's rising, the frog doesn't notice that it's boiling, and literally you end up boiling the frog. But if you put the frog into the boiling hot water, it can feel, because it's coming out of neutral, like ambient temperature into hot temperature, it just jumps out, which I always find, you know, like really interesting. And I think relationships is one of those places where, you know, you're in them and you're in this sea of the relationship and you're charting these waters together that oftentimes you don't really notice when things happen. What was the impetus for you to realize actually things aren't working and there's a bit of a rift growing? Like, you know, was it too little too late, or was it something that, you know, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think probably it was too little too late, was really the way that it happened. She was really struggling with all of that early in the picture, probably between about 8 and 13 or 14. I just went through the motions of being a mum, and I was so consumed by my own difficulties and challenge with the relationship that I had with her dad and how challenging that was, because we weren't together at that time and there was a lot of animosity between us. And I was so overwhelmed by this sense of anger and despair and grief and rage, really, you know, all of these things that I kept feeling like this shouldn't be happening. And, you know, I felt unable to hold those feelings for myself. And then the other thing that was happening for me at that time is that partly as a way of feeling something else, I brought in another partner who was able to really care for me and love me through that. Mm. So, you know, I felt like I was able to then get my emotional needs met. But where I really failed as a mum through that period was that I didn't then take the time to look at what my child needed and to be more present for her. You know, I just kind of didn't notice. I was so busy with my own pain.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So there was quite a bit of time where, you know, I just... If I'm really honest, I probably ignored her needs. I pushed them away. I acted as though what she needed was trivial or not important. And, you know, that really, over a period of many years, that really told her a story about her value to me.
Mm.
And so to answer your question about where I noticed that this was becoming a real problem was when she was in high school, and she had quite a bit of trauma in high school with relationships with peers and, you know, lots of challenges, as people do in high school. And, you know, not unlike other kids, she started to act out at school and at home and didn't want to be at school. She became really disengaged. She became very oppositional. There were a lot of challenges between us. And I remember a period there where, you know, we would fight, and we would just fight and fight, and it would never end. And there was screaming and shouting and throwing things and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, she would sometimes, you know, it would be 11 o'clock at night, and she would be 14 maybe, and pick up a bag and just leave the house and be gone. Mm. And, you know, as a mum, I guess that was the point where I would kind of freak out and, you know, say, what do I do now? How do I fix this?
Mm. And how do you fix those situations?
That's the eternal question, isn't it, as a parent? How do you fix it? Mm. So I sat in that for a long time, and there was lots of back and forth, lots of visiting psychologists, me visiting psychologists, sending her off to psychologists, talking to everybody I could possibly talk to try to get a sense of what was going on. And I mean, you know, the more people you ask, the more opinions you get. And I, there was no clarity for me at that time.
Mm. And then what helps you come out to the other side with clarity? Because even as you're sharing, and even for those tuning in, I'm sure that they're aware that what you're sharing, you're not sharing lightly, and it's quite profound that you're able to share so openly what you're sharing. So it feels like there's been tools that have supported you resolve a lot of this stuff. I don't feel like I'm demeaning it by just calling it stuff. So pardon me for that. If that's the energy of what it came out as. Sorry.
Yeah. No,
but you know what I mean? Like, yeah. What were some of the tools or like, you know, how do you find yourself where you are now able to talk about it without the energetic charges around it?
So I guess, you know, throughout that period, it felt insurmountable. It felt impossible. And, you know, I see clients now really often in the throes of this kind of turmoil and difficulty in their own families with kids and other people in their lives. And, you know, my heart really goes out to people when I hear that, because I know what it feels like to feel like this situation is impossible. There's just nothing that I can do that's going to repair this, you know? I mean, yeah, I guess like for me to gloss over it and call it stuff as well feels a bit dishonoring of if I'm really honest, what I put her through. And so probably the one thing that I could say is that I reached a point in my life where I felt it was necessary to really have a good look inside of me, because for all of this time, you know, it's been, there was, for all of the time where things were difficult between us, it was so easy for me to blame her or blame her dad or blame society, blame the kids at school, blame the teachers, blame everybody else for all of the difficulties that we were having. And I think at no point during
that
period.
It's natural to do, though. It's what we all do.
Of course.
Go on. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's fine. It's hard to look inside ourselves, huh? And, you know, there came a point in my life where I really had to sit and face some of what I have done and how I am responsible for this difficulty that's happened. And that has been the defining moment. It's been a protracted moment, but, you know, the defining shift for Ivy and I has been, in me actually being able to really look at myself, being willing to look at myself and own my part.
What have you had to own, Trix?
Big question, Amrit.
Love you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you know, and this is what I want to share, I guess, because this is really the guts of it. You know, it's so easy to call it stuff. So in my, I touched on it before, but in my own pain, in the breaking up of our family and in the end of my relationship, I was so unhappy there, and I acted out, and I made it all about me. And, you know, I guess what that did to her was to tell her that whatever was going on for her wasn't important. You know, what's happening for mum is the only thing that matters, and, you know, mum's all about mum. So there was no space for her to have a problem or a difficulty or a challenge, you know. And, you know, there were plenty of times, like for all kids and teenagers, where she would come to me and say, I need you, and I just wasn't there. You know, physically I was there, but emotionally I wasn't there. I wasn't available. I went through the motions of putting the food on the table, you know, paying for the things that needed to be paid for at school. Sometimes I barely managed that. And, you know, for her it felt like a real dismissal of herself as a human.
How is that reflected in your own journey with yourself? And I ask from that place, Trix, where I've started to come to realize about certain things myself at the moment. Say if like you and I are talking right now, yeah, and you get up and leave and you go tend to something. And in my mind, it's like, oh, okay, all right. She probably had something important to do and off she went, you know, and she started tending to that more important thing. And I rationalize it. I'm really good, as you know, I'm a coach, you know, we work together and like I'm really good at coaching myself as well, you know, so I can sit there and just go, actually, all good, like, you know, something important must have happened. And it's just a quick dialogue with the rational self and it goes, yep, she'll be back and then we can pick up the conversation when we left off. But when I check in with my emotional body or like my inner self, you know, this kind of inner child, if you will, when I check in with my that little version of me, I check in and I'm like, how did that feel? Because that's where I had to, that's the person I ended up having to talk to, because the reason I was convincing myself that it's all good is because some part of me didn't feel okay. So then I check in with that part and it's like, oh, you feel like that's not important. You're not important and something must have been more important. And you're like, oh, so you feel like shit. And it's like, yeah, actually I don't feel so good. And it's like, oh. And then my inclination still remains to be like, actually, you know what? It's okay. Like she's got something, she was busy and something. But again, when I say she was busy, she had something more important to do. What I've communicated down to my inner child is basically just, oh, you're not that important. What she's tending to is more important than you. And not saying that you've ever done this to me, is an example. And so I started to realize that as I'm having these moments day to day, where I'm just convincing myself and rationalizing my situation, I'm dishonoring kind of how I feel internally. And this inner child in me that actually just, it doesn't like, and the truth is, I just, all it needs from me is just go, oh, she left. That sucks. Yeah, it does. You feel like it sucks, huh? Yeah, it does. Okay. And just to sit with it and just not say anything about it, just to sit there and be present to it and just be like, okay. And then eventually it'll shift anyway because it's like, oh, well, at least you've got my back. And it'll just move. But one of the things that I've started to realize, and this is by no means a blame game, because as we said before, it doesn't serve us at all in any way. But I started to realize that actually that was probably programmed in, right? And by probably being kind, by the way, my parents were parented and my parents parented me, right? It was just like, actually, it's okay that, you know, this is happening, you know, because they don't want you to feel upset. So they rationalize with their adult mind the scenario and the situation for you. What they don't do is get down on their knee and sort of go, how are you feeling because that happened? Because in their mind, it's trivial, right? But then we carry that same patterning on, right, is what I'm hearing from you. And potentially that, you know, what you said was, you know, you're basically realizing that you're having to look in and sort of reprogram and reshift some of these things. My question was going to be, and if I didn't give all this context, it would have sounded like a really rough question. So answer all the context. How much do you now identify that, like, it's, you know, the work that you had to do on yourself, like, you know, that she was holding space for you to do, basically, like, you know, all this stuff that she presented in your field was a matter of you having to have to look at going, actually, there's some unprocessed stuff here that I've got to look at, like that realization and that stuff. Like, can you talk to us about that process?
Yeah, about 1,000,000% that. And you know, I'm a delver, you know, I like to look into myself and I like to understand myself, and I've always been, you know, I've been seeing a psychotherapist since forever. And, you know, I realized at some point that, you know, I'd go in there and I'd chit chat with my therapist every week and talk about the things. And, you know, I really thought all through my 20s and my early 30s that I was getting it, you know, I'm doing the work. But I guess there came a point with my relationship with Ivy where, you know, if I kind of realized that if I was going to be really, really deeply honest with myself, you know, and really honor the pain in me and you know, what's the patterns that need to be moved and to really see them. I needed to actually own things that felt terrifying to own, absolutely terrifying. And I guess, you know, for me, that's when the work really started. Yeah. So.
And how do you go about firstly identifying the things? And then secondly, how do you honor them and treat them?
Well, okay, yeah, this is really interesting. So I guess what I should say is I had a lot of anxiety when I was in my 20s and probably a bit of depression as well, and I would self-harm in some interesting and creative ways. And, you know, I sort of, I spent all this time in therapy, but, you know, I'd look at all of that and always my story was somehow that those things were someone else's fault, you know. So I'd go into therapy and I'd talk about those things and I'd constantly just tell this story to my therapist and over to myself and to other people who I was speaking with, as if the way that I was behaving and the way that I was handling my emotions and managing my life was somehow the product of outside circumstances that I couldn't control. And this was the story that I had going on for years, you know, and I was doing the work. I was doing my best to do the work, you know. There was no part of me that was that's not true. I was going to say there was no part of me that was trying to avoid it, but, of course, there was a part of me that was trying to avoid it, or I would have got there earlier.
Dang it.
But I would say I come from a family where, you know, on both my mum and dad's side, where having any kind of emotional catharsis, you know, any sort of, actually in a way, any sort of emotion that isn't just being happy and acting like everything's all good was not welcome, just not welcome. And, you know, when I look at my parents, you know, they're in their 60s now, and it's very interesting because my brother has recently had a big trauma in his life also, and I believe now from watching my brother and I process some of this stuff more honestly and really feel our pain and sit with it and be in it and not try to just blame someone else for it and push it away as if, you know, that's not the issue. The issue is someone else did this thing to me, you know, as we've been able to actually gather ourselves, both of us, and really sit in that. I'm noticing my parents starting to feel more comfortable to sit with what's in them. And that's the thing I'd never seen modeled to me as a kid. And, you know, I know they hadn't seen it modeled to them as kids either. It was definitely not something that was welcome in their families.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. Trish, what's your vision for, like, intergenerational healing? Like, I know that's a big word, but I know, you know, for those that know Trix, you know she's meditated on this. What's your vision for intergenerational healing?
Yeah. So I believe that that healing between generations can happen in either direction. And I really know from my own experience, I mean, I really feel it in me, that the more I'm prepared to own what's here for me right now and look at the ways that I've dishonored my mum and the ways that I've dishonored my daughter, I feel like all I can do is work with me, you know, and the more work that I do to face that, the more the women and the family members on either side of that are able to benefit from the work that I'm doing. So, you know, it's all, you know, in my past, in my earlier times, I used to, you know, call my mum. I would call my mum regularly and, you know, complain to her and yell at her and be angry with her about, you know, why aren't you more this or that or present, or why didn't you love me better, or why didn't you care for me in a different way? And I had all of these complaints for my mum. And, you know, now what I realize is the best way that I can heal that pain that I have, you know, that I felt then like I'd received as a wound from my mum, is to heal me and to work on me and to be with, to actually, as you say, you know, talk to my inner child and talk to the part of me that feels dismissed or like I've been a burden or like I've not been loved in the way that might have felt meaningful to me, you know. And if I can learn to face that part of myself and bring her out into the light and give her a little snuggle, you know, then I'm able to hold so much more. And when my mum sees me do that, I think it makes it safe for her because she doesn't feel to blame and she doesn't feel like I'm, I wouldn't say she doesn't feel to blame. Maybe I imagine that it makes it a safer place for her to look at her stuff, you know, which wasn't, I guess, a thing that people in her generation really had as a thing that was held in much esteem, you know. So I feel like by doing my work, I make it safer for my mum to do her work. And by doing my work, I'm showing my daughter that I'm showing up for her. And I can only imagine that by the time, if she is crazy enough to have children, that, you know, by modeling to her, like, hey, you know what, things can be really bad and you can do a really bad job at a relationship, and at some point you can decide to show up and you can just do that any moment you're ready. You can show up for that. And I feel like if I'm able to model that for her, then I'm really offering her this gift that she can then pass on to her children. And I hope that, you know, that will be passed all the way down through my line of future ancestors. Yeah.
How much I just got to ask you this question. Like, this question I already have, I know you, so... But anyway, I just got to go there with it. How much more meaning and purpose did you bring to your healing when it wasn't just about you anymore?
That's a really lovely question. It took me a long time to get to that. And, wow, like, yeah, it's been exponential. Like, incredibly so, you know. And for me to see, I mean, I see it, like I see it on every level, you know, when my daughter sees me shift. Every single time she sees me shift, she shifts. And when I see it, it just brings me so much joy and gratitude for what is possible. And It really inspires me to keep going, and it inspires me to dig deeper, you know. And that's been the process that I've been on with her, I guess. You know, if I really can speak about what that's looked like, you know, at first I started to face maybe it isn't her, you know, maybe she's not this difficult person that just always wants to say no and yell in my face, you know, maybe some of the things that I've done and the ways that I've behaved have actually really hurt her. And that, you know, at the start, it was so hard to look at. And so, you know, I was still so consumed with my own pain. Still, you know, I still, in that place, I could face at the start a little bit of, you know, maybe I should try and not yell so much. Maybe I should stop throwing things, you know, maybe... Yeah, I mean, I was a diabolical mother when she was young. I've hit her, I've hurt her, I've chased her around the house. Like, you know, I was physically abusive in a pretty monumental way toward my daughter. I was not an easy parent for her to have. And when I started to look at this, you know, I'd look at just small things that were coming up in that moment and think, oh, you know, maybe I shouldn't have shouted so loud. Maybe I shouldn't have told my friend in front of her what a jerk she was, you know. Maybe I shouldn't have been so righteous. And it would be just these little things that were very painful for me to face, but I could see them and I could name them. And I'd go, oh, yeah, okay, maybe I need to deal with that. And then the more I looked at it, you know, and the more I was able to sit with it, and it started just with little things, and I would consider it more, and I would take it to my therapist, and I would work hard to own these small things. And it was the consistency of really facing them, you know, not looking at one thing and going, oh, that's too hard, and running away from it. It was a real commitment to, okay, so next time we have a discussion about this, what if I handle it in a different way? And I'd just try it with one little thing, and I'd see, you know, just a glimmer, just something tiny. And it wasn't necessarily in her, you know, she for a very long time would still respond to me with real anger and challenge. Defensiveness because, you know, what I had brought to her for so long was so painful. Of course, she was expecting me to turn back on her like a snake and bite her.
And that must be challenging as well, right, because then the inclination is like you're creating the shift within you, but then the other person already knows you a certain way, and then almost you're trying to shift, but then the other person almost responds to you like you're still that same old person, and yet you've got to have the fortitude and the temperance to continue on your shift despite not being acknowledged for your shift, not even seen for your shift, and then also keep shifting and not just go, oh, it's not even worth it because I'm going to be this person. Man.
And if I can give you an example of how that's played out between us, which is probably when I started to notice a real difference, it would be, for example, she and I, you know, when we would relate and things would get hard, there would be shouting and yelling, you know, I would throw things at her. I would try to hit her, you know, and she would be ready to punch me in the head, you know. We would be ready to go, you know. It was like almost like a sister relationship, but, you know, I was the mum and I didn't take responsibility for that role. And so there came a point where I recognised this cannot go on. I cannot behave like this anymore, that, you know, I'm not honoring her and I'm not honoring myself. And, you know, if I don't move this, we can't go anywhere from here. And so we were living in a house together. We've had a few periods of living together, living apart, living together, living apart. And we've been living in a house together and over a, you know, a quite short period, I started really recognizing, okay, I have to change something. And she, of course, because I would emotionally leave her throughout her life, so she had a real issue with abandonment. And I knew that, and I know what that feels like because I have this wound myself. Mm. And she would, we would fight, and some of the things, you know, and she, of course, she's my child and I'm her mum and we've spent so much time together, so we know how to hurt each other, you know. And when somebody's screaming at you or you know, in the case of maybe I'm just not letting her have something that she wants, she knows exactly where to push.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or she, at that time, you know, she would know, of course, she's smart, you know. And so she would not see for a long time that I was trying so hard to move to be a different kind of mum for her. She couldn't see it. And so I would move to try to have a conversation in a different way. And she would hold me through her responses to me in this place of, you're still this horrible woman and I can't get through to you, and so I'm just going to attack you in the same ways that I did. And for a long time, I mean, for a long time, you know, no matter how much I wanted to move, that little broken bit of me would just go, rah! And I just, you know, no matter, all of the intention in me was like, do it better, do it differently, do it the way that you really want to do it. And I would just snap, and so I'd go straight back into what I was doing before, and then she'd look at me and go, see,
told you,
you're the same. And you know, for me, far out, it was like every time it happened it would just crush me, because I'd think, you know, you're doing it, you're getting there, like I could see it and I could feel it and I knew what was needed. And I want to be careful about saying this because I don't want to dishonor her process, you know, but she was so hurt. She couldn't let me change for a long time. She needed to see me in that light to be able to live with herself, because it was either, I really believe it was either she could start to look at me in a different way and see me as being a woman that was actually a reasonable person, but in the place where she was, if she did that, then what she did was she abandoned herself, you know. And as you say, she couldn't then look at the little child in her that was so broken and hold that part of her safe and go, my mum's a horrible bitch. You know, so it was these two options that she had, and she couldn't configure that in her mind in a way that allowed any resolution. So there was a long period where we were stuck in this trap. And what shifted it, and this is the thing that I see with parents of teenagers, and this is the thing that many a counsellor has said to me, and I've said, it's too hard. But the thing that shifted it was that I started doing something different. So when we'd fight, knowing that she would feel abandoned and knowing that she would act out and knowing that potentially she would maybe self-harm, maybe she would, you know, do something that was very damaging to her. You know, there was always the possibility of something really terrifying happening because of a new choice that I was going to make. Mm. But the choice that I had to make was I either stayed in the situation and the same thing would keep playing out, that same pattern, or I made the decision to start saying to her, this is not okay anymore. I'm not going to continue to fight with you. I'm going to leave the house now. I'm going. And I'd just say that and I'd leave. And, you know, the theory is that's what you do. But when your heart is so involved, you know, I was so attached. Mm-hmm.
Triggered. Hooked.
It's a trap, man. And I felt like I can't leave you because what if you do something that's so harming and damaging to you and I can't forgive myself, you know? And I just laced up my boots one day and went, this is what I'm going to do. And I did it. And, you know, 50 phone calls to my phone later or whatever it was, I don't know. And, you know, I eventually calmed and gave her space to calm. And came home, and it wasn't good, you know. When I turned up back home, it was the same story again. She felt that I'd done something unforgivable by leaving.
More abandoned, yeah.
More abandoned. And then over time, over many months, that was my strategy, and I just kept doing it. And I just kept doing it. And I just had to trust, you know.
The process.
Yeah. And whatever is out there to hold her and to keep her safe while I did what I needed to do as the adult, the slowly.
Blossoming.
Blossoming adult, yeah, at 40 something maybe, to you know, that as I was doing this work and really what I was learning to do in that was learning to hold my emotions and learning to hold my pain and not to discharge that all over her, so that she had to hold not just what was for her but also what was mine. And so it became easier and easier, you know. It did get easier. And she did start to realize that, okay, mummy's not okay. Mummy's going to go and I am going to be okay. She was okay eventually, you know. And now I guess we've kind of reached a point where we'll have a disagreement about something. And, you know, we still get angry. And I'll go, rah, 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 rah. And then I'll say, you know, this is too much. I'm going, or I'm hanging up now. I'm not doing this now. We're not doing this. And I'll go. And the response from her now is so different. She now will go, oh, fine. And, you know, sometimes she'll hang up in my ear and go, I'm not continuing this. I'm just not, you know. And so she's kind of getting what I've been modeling to her, which is it's too heated, it's too hard, I need space. And she does, she goes, and she'll go out, she'll go away and do something for a couple of hours. I won't hear from her anymore for a couple of hours, and then she'll come back to me and go, sorry, I was a jerk. Or she'll come back to me and say, you were really difficult before. Maybe she won't use those words. She's a bit cheekier than that, you know, but she'll come back and she'll actually have something really constructive to say, and the conversation will go from there.
Wow. Boundaries. Wow. Thank Boundaries. You for sharing, Trix. Jesus, mate, the depth of your story. So I want to ask the question that I've been waiting to ask. Why now? How come we're having this conversation now after all this time? This is a journey you've been on for years. Mm-hmm. What's brought you to this place where you're willing and ready and poised and comfortable and prepared to share what's been going on? Why now?
I think before it was too painful, before I felt I was so unsure for all of this time as I've been going through this process with Ivy, I've felt so uncertain as to whether the damage that I had inflicted upon her as a kid and as a teenager was able to be repaired. I didn't have faith then that I had what it takes to be able to repair it. And I, you know, I was really concerned that we would have this relationship forever that was just defined by anger and
rage,
disappointment, rage. Yeah, yep. I really felt that I had abandoned her so many times that she may never forgive me. And I wasn't prepared to speak to it because I guess I kind of felt like, you know, at any moment, it was so tenuous that I felt like at any moment this could all just fall apart and, you know, I could screw it up again or, you know, she could find some other thing that she hasn't forgiven me for and all of this could open back up again. So I didn't necessarily trust that we were in a place where it was safe for me to share. And, you know, Ivy and I have reached this beautiful place where there's a real understanding now. And she's 22, you know, and when I was 22, I mean, you know, and my mum is a beautiful, loving woman, but when I was 22, I used to call her all the time and call her out on everything and I was always complaining and everything was her fault. And what I want to say about all of this trauma and difficulty and damage that's occurred between my daughter and I is that through this process, as hard as it's been, what exists now, and I feel a real solidity in this feeling, you know, it doesn't feel like it's fleeting. There's this understanding between the two of us, you know, and it's not just from mum down to child where I can look at her and go, gee, you know, I see these parts of you that are traumatized and that are very fragile and, you know, though I do see them and I try my best to hold them. But through this process for the two of us, from her to me, there's this love that, you know, I don't know if I've ever felt it from another being. She sees it, and you know, it feels gratuitous for me as a mum to be sitting here going, you know, she sees me. She sees my brokenness and she sees my flaws and she sees the hot mess that I am. I was probably more than am, you know, and she knows it deeply in her body what a mess I have been and how I've projected that out onto everybody around me, especially her. And she, I know that the work I've done has been, I felt called to do it, you know. I got to a point where there was no other choice. I couldn't live with myself anymore. I could not live with myself as a person who had inflicted this much damage on my child. I couldn't do it. And she sees that, she knows it. And I feel like that might not be embedded as deeply now as the painful stuff, but I feel that she forgives me in a really meaningful way because she's seen how deep I will dig for her and to heal this between us. And so what exists now is this, you know, we just embrace the mess that is and that has been. And, you know, I look around at my friends with kids and her friends and their parents, and, you know, I hear stories from clients and other people with kids a similar age, and I am so humbled by what exists between Ivy and I now. It's like, it is extraordinary, really, the shift that's happened. So it feels pretty safe to talk about.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Sister Mel. So for those that are tuning in, I'm aware, and I know Trixie is as well, or Tracy is as well, that what she's sharing is not light. And my question for you, Trix, is, you know, this is confronting, not just for yourself, for, you know, for us to tune into as well, and the courage that you're holding to be able to be so exposed and so vulnerable in your sharing, like, even hats off sounds stupid to say, but do you know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah, the courage that you're holding in there. Why are you sharing? What's your hope?
Because we're all a mess. We're all a little bit broken, or a lot. And I think it's so easy to turn away from the mistakes that we've made and the pain that we've caused other people. And it's so easy to cut people out of our lives. Well, that's not true. It's not easy to do that either. But, you know, I see it. I mean, you see it. We've all seen it. We all know people who choose that route. And, you know, I perhaps haven't had the depth of difficulty with someone in my life where that's been the only option, you know, or in this case it certainly wasn't. But, you know, I think we all have this potential inside of us to face what feels insurmountable and what feels really hard, you know. We have it, like every single one of us, it's there. And, you know, whether we have support around us or not makes a big difference too. And I just feel like, you know, the thing that I guess feels, I guess the really important thing that I want to share is that my sense of it is, it doesn't matter how far gone this problem is, you know. And it doesn't matter how much pain you've inflicted on another person, if you're prepared to own it, it can be healed. And I mean, that may not look like the other person wants something to do with you, you know. For quite a long time, as I said, Ivy just, she pushed away all of my efforts to repair this, and she was not up for it. She just, yeah, you know, it was hard for her, and it was hard for me to honor that part of her that was not prepared to forgive me for a long time. But the important thing for me in that place became forgiving myself. And I knew that the only way that I was going to be able to do that was to continue on this path of looking for every opportunity and every piece of action that I could take, no matter how small that might be, to take responsibility for what I'd done and to show her, you know, even if it was from afar at times, to show her, like, hey, you know, I'm not the person I was before, and sometimes I fall back into that, but I'm going to pull myself back out and I'm going to keep going.
Thank you so much for sharing, Sister Bam. Thank you. Thank you. I don't even have the words, really. I've got one last question, which has, it's a three-part question. So do I have one question or three? I'm not really sure. Let's start by part number one. So let's imagine Ivy's listening in to this episode. What would you like to say to her?
Ivy, you are just the brightest little spark of joy that exists in my life, and I'm so glad you're here. And, you know, I would want her to know that I'm so grateful that she's found a space to forgive me for all the pain that I've caused her. And my hope for her is that she is able to carry the torch of what she and I have created through our relationship and just shine it on everybody that she comes in contact with, you know, because she is just such a beautiful beacon of a human.
Thank you so much. Part two to the question, similar sort of energy. If your mother's listening into this episode, what would you say to her?
That one's going to make me cry. Wow, yeah. I would tell her that I'm sorry for all the times that I blamed her, for not loving me enough, or for me feeling like I was a burden on her, because, you know, I guess the pattern in our family has been for the women to tell the daughters that it's too hard, they're too hard. And it's been a really painful thing to carry, to feel like I was too big a burden for my mum. But having now been the mum and feeling exactly that, like this burden, it's too hard. I can't carry this. I don't have space for this amongst my own pain. I guess I would tell my mum that I forgive her for any feelings that I've had, that I've been too hard for her or been too much for her to carry, and I see her struggle when I see what she was given to do the job. And, you know, I really honour that she has done the best job that she's been able to do. And look what she made, Amrit. Thanks, Mum. I love you. You did a good job. We did a good job.
Thanks, Sister Pam. And the last part of the three-part question, and by no means the least, is if your inner child was listening in to this episode, what would you be saying to your inner child?
She's a bright little spark too. I'd tell her that she's magic. And that she's doing a good job. Well, she should just keep going. And then I've got her back.
Mm.
Yeah. That was a lot, wasn't it?
Truly was and truly is. Trixie, for those tuning in, Tracy Kopp. Sister Bear, thank you so I don't have the words. The depth of which you show up, not just in this episode, but all the time, you know, and the vulnerability, the strength that you embody, the courage, you know, the willing to confront yourself and, you know, be comfortable in even the space you hold out, you know, and we're a very tight community that we're a part of, you and I, and being willing to call like us out when we're not in our integrity as well. You know, it's, you're a total warrior and it's such an honor to have had you here and to be, have, may a platform for somewhere for you to be able to share something so deeply and so potently. Like Inspired Evolution is blessed for having you here. Thank you so much for your time and energy here today.
Thank you, Amrit.
But also this conversation is informed by so much work that you've put into yourself, your loved ones, your own heart, your own being. And I just want to take a moment to honor and acknowledge that. Thank you so much for all that that informs this conversation we got to have here today. And yeah, on behalf of myself and the Inspired Evolution tribe, our tribe, I just want to thank you and wish you all the best always. As you know, I'm always in your corner.
Always no, you are. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I've always got your back, Sister Bear. Love you so much, eh? For those that are tuning in, thank you so much for tuning in. Always, always, always a pleasure to be in this space with you guys. Links to find out more about Tracy. She has a YouTube channel that's budding. We'll put the links to that in there. If you want to go meet her in person, Urban Alchemist, an amazing place here in Melbourne. I know some of you are tuning in from all over the world, but if you are local to Melbourne, the Urban Alchemist is an incredible space. You can go get massages. You can go get your back cracked. There's beautiful chiro work. And actually, most people that walk past don't even walk past wanting massages or things like that. They just want to buy flowers because the place looks like a florist. It's such a little urban nook. It's a real getaway. It's an urban oasis. And it is just an extension of this beautiful sister's heart. Mm. Thank you so much for everything you do, Trix.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening in to another amazing episode of the Inspired Evolution. If you're loving these episodes, make your way across to YouTube, click subscribe. Fresh episodes are launched every Monday with highlights being released throughout the week. Thank you so much. And hey guys, just so you know, a lot of love, heart, soul, and work goes into these episodes. So if you could, please leave us a 5-star review and comment on iTunes. I love reading your positive feedback. It fans the flames of the passion to continue to create and help you live the life that you love. Thank you so much for your wonderful feedback. I can't wait to see you again in the next episode. Big love from Amrit. And remember to stay inspired to evolve.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.